bring them out, bring them out, bring them out, bring them out. It's hard to yell when the bat rails in your mouth.
Come on.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Hey.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Yeah.
Bring them out, bring them out.
Hey.
Welcome to ESPN Sports Radio 1392.5 here in Lexington, Kentucky. This is Angelo Carriero with you, and I'll be hosting this hour of sports programming, and we've got a lot of it. We have high school football to talk about. We've got NBA playoffs, college football scores from last night, which really disappointing night in college football, if you ask me. I mean, to be honest, the advertising for college football and NFL leading up, it almost doesn't feel like it's here. But sometimes that's how the games go whenever you have an Oklahoma playing a Southeast Missouri or a Clemson playing a Wake Forest. It's just kind of how it goes. But we'll be talking a little bit about that. I'm going to have Tyler Dragon on with me. He's a friend of the show from the Cincinnati Inquirer. He's going to be on to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. He has been covering the team, even though with the COVID times, there's certain parameters that you have to go through. So to have someone on here that's actually been able to be with the team, I'm really glad, because we're going to get you set for the Cincinnati Bengals this season. And then at the end of the show, I'm going to give you my NFL picks for the day. Last year, when the show was Jimmy and Angelo, we had a contest. See who was the pick king out of us two, picking games straight up. Who's the winners? Who's the losers? Getting ready for the playoffs. And I was able to come out victorious on that end at the end of the football season last year. But we are going to start out with a way of more of a sportsy version of the way of how I see it. And this is how I see it when it comes to high school football, Friday night, varsity game night, a program for those who are unfamiliar with it. I, along with Josh Toffness and Kim Price, we go and find the best, or what we think is the best. We try to find a game of interest in the city for Lexington High School football. And if you hadn't heard, which I'm pretty sure everybody had from all the news broadcasts and every other, pretty much anybody that covers sports here locally was at the North Hardin Frederick Douglass football game on Friday night. And why is that? Well, it's because there were four University of Kentucky football commitments in that game alone, which is huge. That's usually like, what, a fifth or of a recruiting class sometimes? It's unbelievable to have that much talent. And for me as a fan of high school football here in Lexington, a guy that's always wanted to see high school football in Lexington succeed, that was a wonderful thing to see. As we had Dakel Crowdis and Jagger Burton for the Frederick Douglass Broncos, and for the North Hardin Trojans, we had running back Lavelle Wright and safety Jordan Levette on the field. And that game was unbelievable. It was like one of those classic heavyweight boxing matches back in the 80s and 90s. It was kind of like a Triple H Batista back in around WrestleMania 21. It's one of those where it's not going to have all of the high-flying, super wow action. It is a hard-fought football game between two teams that only suffered one loss last year. North Hardin against Trinity in the semifinals, and Frederick Douglass against Covington Catholic in the state championship game for the class of 5A. So you had these two titans of Kentucky football playing against each other. And like I said, the game didn't disappoint. And I'll give you the ending before I talk about some of the specifics of the game and the players, obviously, how they performed and what Kentucky can expect from these soon-to-be freshmen for next year and then in the coming future. The game had an ending of the likes that I have never seen. So in the fourth quarter, Frederick Douglass was able to drive the field after the offense had stalled out essentially the whole game, as Darius Neal ran for a touchdown, put the Broncos up 17-6, and then the North Hardin Trojans, with only a minute and a half left to get down the field to try to score and end the game with a win. It was fourth down. They had pretty much this, I mean, for a fourth down in the fourth quarter with less than a minute to go, it was the game. Manny Wimberly drops the ball off to Lavelle Wright. Lavelle Wright picks the ball off of the essentially the ground. His fingertips were under the ball, but it was that low of a pass that Lavelle Wright, the running back commitment to the University of Kentucky, scoops the ball up and makes an SEC running back play as he knifed through the defense. And when I say knife, this kid is like a butter knife going through the defense. It was unbelievable. And he was downed about a couple yards short of the end zone. They line up for a field goal. North Hardin lines up for a field goal. They had hit a field goal earlier in the game, but on an extra point kick, Frederick Douglass at the beginning of the game had blocked the extra point. So this is a 50-50 toss-up. You could feel the tension. You could cut it with a knife. And they snap the ball. The ball skips off the ground into the placeholder's hands. And the kick goes up, and it is blocked. Frederick Douglass blocks the field goal kick, but not good enough. Because even after the block, the ball had enough momentum to go through the goalposts, and the Frederick Douglass scoreboard siren sounded. 19-17, North Hardin left Lexington with a victory. I have never seen an ending quite like that at the professional, college, or high school level in a game of that magnitude. ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Angelo Carriero hosting today. We were on Hank 96.1, though, because of the Cincinnati Reds baseball, which you can hear the Reds all season long right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM. But to talk a little bit about the specifics of this game, Let's go to the bare bones of Frederick Douglass and North Hardin. The reason why this game, as much as a Frederick Douglass loss hurts, just kind of a morale. I mean, they're going to bounce back. That was a huge game. It's not like that's going to affect them for the rest of the season. That, oh, we lost this North Hardin game, we don't have it, because many things impressed me from Frederick Douglass, and I'll get to those in a second. But what was concerning were the turnovers. Frederick Douglass had 5 turnovers in that game against North Hardin. 3 interceptions by new quarterback Sam Cornett, and they had 2 fumbles. 4 of those turnovers were in the first half, and it was concerning, to say the least, to see the passing game not get off the ground. I had said before the game, if anybody who follows high school football around here knows that 2 years ago, when current Cincinnati tight end Cam Jones, he was a quarterback here, and the offense was, I mean, it was Kansas City, the Kansas City Chiefs. It was that type of offense, because you had Michael Lowe, who's a walk-on at the University of Louisville right now. You had Dekel Crowdis as a sophomore, who obviously University of Kentucky commit. You had Gardner Webb, baseball player, but absolute speed demon Hayden Hunt on that. You had Montavion Bean at the wide receiver core there. DeMarco Fishback was having a running back year for the ages in that game. He was just unbelievable that season. And that passing offense is as good as it was. I thought this one could be and potentially still will be better with Sam Cornett under center, with Dane Key, with Crowdis, with Allen, Isaiah Allen, with Ja'Kari Cowherd, with Cameron Dunn. But it didn't pop off. The Broncos only had 102 passing yards. Sam Cornett, 50% completion percentage, 3 interceptions. He was fairly inaccurate for his first game. I would chalk that up to just butterflies. And he was still able to get it under control in the fourth quarter. And he threw this one pass to Crowdis towards the end on their drive to go up 17-16 there in the fourth quarter. I think it was just first game butterflies for him. But that's kind of what submarined the Broncos, even though they were, what, 6 feet away from winning that game, even with 5 turnovers. It still didn't hamstring them for the entire game, is what I'll say. And the reason why is because this Frederick Douglass Broncos defense, this is the Baltimore Ravens from the 2000s. I mean, this is Alabama the last decade. This is an elite defensive program now. Because they lost some pieces last year, including University of Baylor football player Devin Neal Jr. And this run defense, you're talking about a guy in Lavelle Wright at running back, who I was thoroughly impressed with. And when you look at this kid, long arms, lean frame, he runs so aggressively, and that's what I love. He kept his feet chopping. Like, once he had the ball in his hands, it was going to take an army to stop him. And, well, that army was the Frederick Douglass Broncos, because his, other than about two or three plays where he kind of got to break them off, that Broncos run defense just completely stymied him throughout the game. It was unbelievable to see. I mean, rushing yards allowed, get this, 66 yards rushing for Lavelle Wright. Lavelle Wright took every rush in that game from the running back position, and he was only to get 66 yards. We're talking about a kid that, through my eyes, can go up against Georgia and Tennessee and Alabama and LSU on Saturdays. That's the type of guy that we're talking about. And he was able to be stopped for only 66 yards. And that's a big credit to Ramarion Warner in that front, to Samir Farajaj. I mean, to guys like, I'll tell you what, Ty Bryant, who's a cornerback for Frederick Douglass, he has all of these offers ever since he was a freshman. He is skinny as skinny could be, and I'll tell you what, no one wants to play run defense as much as he does. That's what's so impressive. You see these talented, athletic cover corners, and they say, I'm too good to play run defense. But Ty Bryant does play run defense, as does TJ Horton, who kind of had a breakout game for himself. Just a fantastic job by that Frederick Douglass Broncos defense. But our central bank player of the game for Frederick Douglass and for the game, in my opinion, was Darius Neal. And this was a kid that through his sophomore and junior year, I had heard about Darius, and you would see him try to get some action last year, but the season just didn't really work out for him last year. And his older brother, Devin, came in, and he was, I mean, from Jefferson Harkless to DeMarco Fishback to Devin Neal Jr., this program, only 4 years into its existence, has had three, I mean, either borderline elite or absolutely elite running backs, especially Fishback and Neal. And Darius, I felt, kind of struggled to live up to the hype those first couple years. I'll tell you what, Darius proved me and a lot of other people wrong, because he had an absolute killer game against North Hardin. He had 25 rushes for 137 yards and two rushing touchdowns. And he had a fumble, but that was his first carry coming back in from an injury. He had gotten hurt. So even then, I can just attribute that to, man, when you're hurting and that pain sensory goes off, you kind of drop the ball. You kind of, maybe he shouldn't even have been in there because Devon Gidron came in, and he's a little jitterbug out there, man. He was really, really going. It was impressive to see him come and spell Darius. But Darius had an unbelievable game. He was the offense. He put the entire offense on his back. And I was really impressed by that. I really was. I've got to take a break really quick, but when we come back, I'm going to tell you about Jordan Leavitt, who we haven't hit on, a little bit about Jagger, DeKell, and the rest of the University of Kentucky football commitments, and we'll also get into a little bit of NBA playoffs. The Lakers handled business last night. The Clippers are looking to close their game out, and we'll talk a little bit about college football, even though the games last night were not, I would say, necessarily the best. You're listening to Angelo Carriero here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world, WLXG.com. Angelo Carriero here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. I was talking just before the break about North Hardin defeating Frederick Douglass 19-17 on Friday night. Varsity game night was there with the action. I talked a little bit about the game in the first segment, but here I kind of want to talk about my views on the Kentucky commitments. Now, Dakell and Jagger, I'll talk a little less about because we can see them in town. They're guys that Dakell, he's just been a monster since day one. He is a very impressive young athlete. I think he has the ability. He's going to Kentucky as a wide receiver. I think he can be a $1 million cornerback if he ever decided to be. He had a huge return in that game. When it comes to speed, special athletes, and a kid with a smaller frame but long arms, he's just kind of the ideal skill position player. That's just what he is. And there's no if, ands, or buts about him. He is going to find a way at the next level. And he's just so fast and he's so skilled. Really excited for Dakell's. And he's a good kid. And so is Jagger Burton. And Jagger had an injury scare. Both Dakell and Jagger both had injury scares. Neither of them were injured, though. Jagger had to get his ankle taped. But other than that, he was able to come on the field and play at the extremely high level that he always does. Offensive linemen sometimes are a little harder to watch, especially in my play-by-play job where I kind of have to follow the football wherever it goes to kind of illustrate what's happening in the game. But he is, I mean, he's everything is advertised. The kid had offers from Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama. What more do you need to know? Those are the top three programs in the nation. But, oh, I guess other than Kentucky now, since he chose the University of Kentucky over those three. So, you know, Kentucky on the come up. Big shouts out to Mark Stoops and Vince Morrow. But I've already given you a little bit of a picture of Lavelle Wright. And he is a lean running back. He's a little taller. He has very long arms. But what I was so impressed by is, number one, he keeps his legs churning through every and all contact. That kid plays running back the way it's meant to be played. And that's, to me, the way running back's meant to be played is that you're the weapon. The defense should be scared of you when you run. When you're talking about the bigger running backs of all time, like, you know, Earl Campbell, Derrick Henry, it's like, oh yeah, they're so big, we don't want to hit them. Lavelle's not right that. Lavelle Wright is not like that. He is the type of guy that isn't built for that power run, but has the mentality of a power runner. When he has contact, he will hit you, and he will hit you, and he will drive his feet, he will go over you, and then he'll find the next guy, unless he sees the end zone. He's going to find the next guy to deliver that punishment. He was fast, he was able to maneuver, and what I mean by able to maneuver was the second thing I was impressed with. Because he's a little more slender, he is able to squeeze through spaces in the offensive line and through holes between defenders that you see guys like, a name when I was younger that always came up was a guy like Curtis Martin, and more recently a guy like Le'Veon Bell, where you're able to kind of find those gaps and find those spaces to fit yourself through. That's the type of guy Lavelle was in that game. He's a guy I'm very excited to have come to the University of Kentucky to play for the Wildcats. But the guy that, just from a physical standpoint, that impressed me out of all of these kids was Jordan Levette. He is a defensive back commitment. He's a safety, a kid that had 15 interceptions last year for the North Hardin Trojans. That kid has the absolute body and frame and speed to make it as a big-time defensive back in the SEC. And that's what's so important and sometimes hard to find here in Kentucky is a defensive back that is built that way. Usually you find defensive backs in Florida, you find them in Georgia, you find them in Texas, you find them in California, you find them in the typical areas, and even New Jersey sometimes. But he changed the game for North Hardin because when I expected this track field type of offense from Frederick Douglass, he was the reason why they couldn't get it going. And this is a guy that played safety, but he was the only safety. He played a single cover safety. And Frederick Douglass tried to manipulate his position on the field. Sam Cornett was on a lot of rollouts, but they couldn't throw more than 10 yards downfield, because as big as the football field looks, especially when Lavette was just back there by himself, as soon as the ball snapped, it gets narrower and narrower and narrower because that kid is so fast. No matter where you throw it, you better be ready for that kid to flip his hips and go to wherever the ball is. He kept his eyes on Cornette's eyes, and he was able to keep the ball and at the intermediate and even the short pass game. There's a play called levels with outs usually. You have or ends. You have a 5-yard in, a 10-yard in, 15-yard, or you have like a 5, 7, 10. You try to pick apart which level of the defense that you can manipulate, and you have to have the defense play accordingly. Well, whenever Cornette would roll out, they had levels, and Lavette was just there ready to make a play. So a lot of it, especially on the left sideline to like Dane Key, is just dropping that ball off there and trying to get the ball moving in the passing game that way. But downfield, it just wasn't working. And that's because of that kid and how impressive he is. He's going to be someone that you should go out of your way. North Hardin's a team that you need to go out of your way and watch this year. Frederick Douglass is a team that you need to go out of your way and watch this year. Both are extremely impressive. I was very impressed with both sides, with both kids on both teams. I love to see high school football being played in Kentucky, and that was a great first game. Some of the biggest buzz I've seen for a high school football game, and it was warranted. It lived up to it, and that's the way that I see it. A couple scores from around college football last night. Clemson destroyed Wake Forest. They were up by, 20-plus points in the, third quarter. 37-13 was the final of that game. Oklahoma blew out Missouri State. Spencer Rattler had, his coming to the show party. He's kind of got a lot of that high school almost mixtape buzz for a quarterback, which you don't really see. You usually see that in basketball, but he's a guy that seems like he's going to be a big name in college football for the next 3 years, 3 to 4 years. Notre Dame defeated Duke 27-13. Texas just destroyed UTEP 59-3. The backups were in by the fourth quarter. Nothing to see there. A upset that kind of made me go, wow, yesterday was University of Louisiana Lafayette, or the University of Louisiana. I swore I saw Louisiana Lafayette, and yes, it was, defeated Iowa State, number 23 Iowa State, 31-14. That really took me aback. I did not expect that. I think Coach Campbell at Iowa State is a guy. He coached Logan Woodside of Frankfort, who became or Anderson County, but I'm saying from the city of Frankfort that went on to play at Toledo, is currently the backup quarterback for the Titans. So if Ryan Tannehill goes down at any point, you're going to see a Kentucky kid being a starting quarterback of an NFL team. What's cooler than that? But as good of a coach as he, and that's who coached Woodside, was Campbell before he went to Iowa State. Iowa State had some big upsets. Just to see them lose to Louisiana Lafayette was kind of a shocker. EKU not starting the year off very well. They need to stay out of the state of West Virginia. West Virginia defeated EKU 56-10. And from the scores around the and Georgia Tech beat FSU 16-13, which, my goodness, Jimbo Fisher had that program rolling just for it to kind of go off the cliff there. We'll see if they're able to turn it around under Coach Norvell there in Tallahassee, but it's going to be a long process. When Jimbo left, it shouldn't have been. That program should not have been in the tatters that it was. It's Florida State's just had it rough as of late, and I'm sure nobody feels bad for him. Final two scores that I'm going to give you from what I saw last night. Louisville defeated WKU 35-21. Cunningham's a monster. He's going to be really fun to watch. And, Kansas got beat by Coastal Carolina at home, which, Les Miles, man. Kansas must be a despair. I mean, in 2008, when I was in high school, they're the number one team in the nation. They was number one Kansas versus number two Missouri. And 10 years later, and a Charlie Weiss, later, it's just, I don't understand how that program can be that bad, but they are, and they've stayed that bad. Final thing before we get to Dial the Dragon of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Clippers Nuggets tonight, today at 1 p.m. You should really be worried if the Clippers can't close out Denver here. Kawhi and Paul George need to put their stamp, kind of like the Lakers did finishing off the Rockets last night. They won that series 4-1. I had said that the Rockets had a really good chance at beating the Lakers, and after the first game, I definitely thought I was right. But what happened was is that something happened that I didn't think would happen. And I shouldn't have guessed any less from a University of Kentucky former assistant or a student graduate here under Rick Pitino. Is Frank Vogel adjusted? He had played the entire season with Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, and Anthony Davis all on the court in some combination, essentially. And he had decided to go so small that he threw out Taylor Horton Tucker, who is a 19-year-old G League kid that they drafted in the second round. They threw him out in the game because Vogel said, you know what? I'm going small ball. I'm going to beat them at their own game. And I'll tell you what, if you play small ball with Russell Westbrook and James Harden versus the small ball with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, I'll take one of the very best players to ever play this game in LeBron James, and I'll take pretty much who I think is the modern-day David Robinson and Anthony Davis. Good luck stopping those two. Lakers roll on to the Western Conference Finals. Boston ended up knocking off the Raptors. We're going to have Miami with Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo versus the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that's going to be a really fun series, and we're going to see at 1 p.m. today whether or not that the Clippers can stave off Jamal Murray and the Nuggets. But we will know the winner of that game by the time the Cincinnati Bengals come on at 4:05. And to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals is coming on with me right now from the Cincinnati Enquirer, Tyler Dragon. Well, not right now. After the break. Stick around. This Angelo Carriero on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM.
Jumpin', them boys up to something.
Welcome back to ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, streaming live all around the world at WLXG.com. Angelo Carriero with you on this very overcast Sunday morning here in Lexington, Kentucky, and apparently it's like that about an hour and a half north I-75 in Cincinnati, Ohio, where the Cincinnati Bengals will be taking on the Los Angeles Chargers today a little after 4 o'clock, and I thought, you know, I haven't really talked Bengals so much since I rebooted the show. It's been, I think everybody, especially the NFL, was kind of worried, are we going to have a season? What is this going to look like? Is there going to be a COVID outbreak? But everything is full systems go, and since that is the case, I am glad to invite on a friend of the program from the Cincinnati Enquirer, Tyler Dragon. Tyler, you've been able to be with the team this year, but first, before we talk about any of that, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, given all the circumstances. You know, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, but, you know, my family and I, we're safe and healthy, so no complaints over here. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, doing well. I mean, we're in such an interesting time with COVID and a modern, you know, social justice, civil rights movement. It's been unbelievable, like, what's been going on, and I'm just glad that you're doing okay and you're staying safe and your family is safe as well, so that's very good to hear. One thing that I think everybody is chomping at the bit to hear, and I need to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. You have been on the ground covering Cincinnati here since they were able to reboot and go to training camps and whatnot. Tell me, is Joe Burrow going to be the best quarterback in the NFL this year? Is he the chosen one? Is he the guy to save Cincinnati, save professional football in Cincinnati? Tell me the deets.
Well, you know, I don't want to put all the pressure on them that, you know, the metropolitan area of Cincinnati has already placed on Joe Burrow's shoulders. Now, he did look good during training camp. There were some up and down moments, though. I remember he threw an interception to Carlos Dunlap. I know one day that he had a botched snap that led in a fumble. So it wasn't all, you know, roses and peaches and cream for Joe Burrow during training camp. But overall, he did look pretty good, especially for a rookie quarterback coming in with no offseason OTAs or no rookie minicamp. So given the circumstances, he did perform pretty well. But, you know, the Bengals were having a vanilla defense on the other side at him. They weren't really blitzing him, and, you know, they're going to protect their franchise quarterback. So overall, I did give him an A-minus in training camp, but now we're really going to find out what type of player Joe Burrow is. And, you know, I wouldn't place a lot of expectations on him right now because at the end of the day, he still is a rookie. And today he's going up against two of the best pass rushers in the National Football League. So let's, you know, calm down. Let's temper our expectations a little bit and let him grow into a quarterback, because this offseason was an offseason like we've never seen before. I'm not breaking any news there. And he and all other rookies did not have a chance to really grow into the NFL. They're learning on the fly, really. And, you know, Joe Burrow, the Bengals placed a lot on his shoulders by, you know, drafting him number one overall and then releasing Andy Dalton a week later. So they pretty much said, you have the keys to the franchise. And he's been the day one starter as soon as the Bengals drafted him. And I have pretty good expectations for him. I think he's a dark horse candidate to get NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year. But, you know, I do want to see him perform against an opposing defense who's not, you know, just throwing a vanilla defense at him and just letting him, you know, complete passes. And it all starts today against the Los Angeles Chargers at Paul Brown Stadium.
Look, Tyler, you're a fantastic writer, and you've got a podcast and everything. You've got all that. Radio is about sensationalism. They don't want logic and nuance in this. They want to hear Joe Burrow. And you said dark horse for Offensive Rookie of the Year? You're talking about the favorite for the MVP of the NFL, right?
Oh,
and Joe Burrow?
Goodness.
No, I think he's definitely the favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year, unless Clyde Edwards-Helaire has another, you know, 100-plus rushing yard game, or he has 16 more of those. I can definitely see maybe that being the case. But that's good to hear about Joe. He was named captain, correct?
Yes, he's one of seven captains on the team. And, you know, that's a testament to the way he conducts himself and his maturity. I wasn't surprised that he was named captain, but, you know, it is, you know, a great gesture by his teammates. And it shows, you know, how much they believe in him and, you know, how much, you know, they trust him. And, you know, he's already made a positive impression on all his teammates this early on, and that's just a testament to who he is and his character.
So this isn't one of those, you know, faux captains. They weren't just like, oh, he's the star rookie, we got to give him this. This is legit. Like, he earned his captainship, right?
Yes, he definitely earned that C on his jersey.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's very encouraging to hear about Joe. And by the way, you're listening to ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM, Angelo Carriero talking to Tyler Dragon of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Tyler, for Joe to have the Offensive Rookie of the Year, or, you know, in my scape and what I like to spew out is MVP Joe Burrow, how is A.J. Green looking?
Well, initially there was a little bit of a scare early on in training camp because he dinged up his hamstring and he was pretty much out for the majority of camp. And, you know, that's not a great sign when you have a receiver that's coming off of missing all of last season with a left ankle injury, and then you follow that up with a left hamstring injury. He is 100% healthy. He declared that earlier this week. I expect him to be in the game for about, you know, 40 to 55 snaps today. He's the number one, that X receiver on the outside. But, you know, we really don't know how good A.J. Green is going to be. We have not seen him on a football field since December of 2018. And even that game, he didn't finish. So his last full game, you have to go all the way back to October of 2018. So that is almost 2 years from today. So A.J. Green, you know, eyes are going to be on him as well as Joe Burrow, because the Bengals paid him that franchise tag this offseason because they want him to go out there and prove it, that he can stay healthy and he's the A.J. Green of old. And if he proves those two things, then the Bengals will be inclined to probably give him an extension, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years extension, so he can finish his career as a Cincinnati Bengal.
Well, he is the franchise, and to me, one of the best players, one of the consummate Bengals to ever come through here. He's kind of defined what a Cincinnati Bengal is in all of the good ways over the last decade. But the wide receiver core, when talking about Joe Burrow and how he's going to perform, he's going to have to rely heavily on a core that I think a lot of Bengals fans and even some NFL people think that is going to be a pretty threatening wide receiver group. How have they looked in getting in a rhythm with Joe Burrow, especially a guy that I'm interested in John Ross?
Well, the players that he's really built chemistry with early on, and it was very evident, is Tyler Boyd, Auden Tate, and Mike Thomas. Those were the receivers that were pretty much healthy and at training camp the entire time. He really has a good rapport with Tyler Boyd. I expect Boyd to have another 1,000-yard season. That will be his third consecutive. Auden Tate, he's a good red zone threat. He has a big catch radius. Burrow liked to look his way when they were in 11-on-11, especially in the red zone. He goes up and tacks those jump balls. And then Mike Thomas, he had a breakout training camp. He really caught the eyes of the coaching staff and, you know, even me from watching camp. Now, as far as John Ross, he had his own injury, and then he had to deal with his son contracting a coronavirus. So he went back to L.A. for a little while to, you know, make sure his son was okay. And thankfully that his son recovered fine. And
that's great
back
news to hear.
Yeah, he was back in training camp, and then, you know, he did not play in the scrimmage because he got nicked up in his arm, but I do expect him to play. Their chemistry, we really have not seen a lot of, you know, Joe Burrow throw John Ross's way because he just hasn't been, you know, on the field, and the Bengals were being cautious with him because of his arm injury as well as A.J. Green. So today we're going to find out, you know, how much, you know, those players have been working you know, off to the side and before practice, and then when media isn't around, because, you know, A.J. Green and Joe Burrow, they did acknowledge and admit that they have been, you know, working on their timing and their chemistry when, you know, us media members aren't allowed at practice or on and during off days. So that's going to – we're going to find out today how good their chemistry is overall against the Chargers team, who does have a pretty good secondary, even without Derwin James.
ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5 FM, WLXG.com, streaming live all around the world. Tyler Dragon on with the Cincinnati Inquirer. Tyler, you talked about two guys just a second ago in Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram when you said two of the best pass rushers in the league, a guy in Joey Bosa that I think has the potential to be the best defensive player in the NFL someday. This offensive line, Jonah Williams at left tackle, Hopkins at center, you know, Bobby Hart back at right tackle, which every Bengals fan is just absolutely thrilled they could re-sign at the $21 million. Talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about Jonah Williams, how he's looked, maybe a little Billy Price update. What's this offensive line looking at? Are we going to get a competent one in Cincinnati? What's the word?
Well, Jonah Williams doesn't get to ease into his first NFL start. We all know he was injured his entire rookie season with a shoulder injury, and his really his debut is going up against Joey Bosa, one of the best defensive ends in all of the National Football League. He has looked pretty good during practice. He looks like a first-round pick left tackle that the Bengals originally drafted in 2019. So I do expect them to have an upgrade at that position and not a revolving door how they had last year. They started four different left tackles in 2019. As far as the other members in the offensive line, you got Michael Jordan. No, not the basketball player, but the Bengals do have a left
23?
Guard. 23? he's going to be there at the left guard. Then you have Trey Hopkins. They signed him to an extension a few months ago. I expect him to serve that center position. Then you have Xavier Suofilo at right guard. And then at right tackle, as you alluded to, you have Bobby Hart. Now, Bobby Hart, he was the most penalized offensive lineman on the Bengals team last year. And he's going up against Melvin Ingram. So that is, I post three keys every single week for Bengals games as a preview. And that, the left tackle and the right tackle position are really one of my three keys, because that's going to, if you're not going to watch Joe Burrow, which I know all fans are, I would watch those two positions right there, because that's going to play a huge role in the outcome of the game, is how well the Bengals can block those two pass rushers, because those are the best two defenders on the Chargers teams, and those are two Pro Bowlers. And the Bengals have pretty much a rookie out there at left tackle, who, you know, but he is a first round pick, and another guy who's really inconsistent, and we've seen it, him get penalized left and right, whether it's false starts or whether it's holding, you know, illegal contact. So that is going to be a huge matchup for the Bengals today. And, you know, I would have my eyes on that as well as the number one overall pick, Joe Burrow.
Yeah, if Bobby Hart's the drum, then Melvin Ingram's Travis Barker. I mean, it's just going to be absolutely brutal. I really do think so on that. Yeah, so I'm guessing Billy Price isn't working out, which is unfortunate for them. I know he's a backup right now. We'll see if that pick ever works out. But moving on to the defensive side of the ball, and we don't have a ton of time left, so I'm just going to make this an a two-part kind of umbrella question. Again, thank you for your time this morning. Is the run defense and the new-look secondary, what can we expect from those two units this season?
Well, the Bengals have four new starters on defense, and it would have been five if Trey Waynes were healthy. He suffered a pectoral injury early on in training camp. So the Bengals are hoping for DJ Reader and Josh Bynes, Von Bells of the world. They're hoping that their new offseason acquisitions can kind of upgrade their run defense and as well as their pass defense. We know the Bengals were in the bottom of the league in run defense and near the bottom of the league and defending the pass as well. So there's going to be four new faces out there in the Bengals' defensive side of the football. The Bengals spent a lot of money on the on defenders. So to answer your question, is that going to be able to, you know, satisfy and upgrade the run game? It remains to be seen, because the Bengals really did not hit during the offseason, during training camp, and we don't have any preseason games to go from. I will tell you, on paper, let me preface my statement, on paper, the Bengals look like a better defense, but I want to see it on the field.
That's fair enough. Okay, so this is going to be a good barometer of how you feel. 4 o'clock, or a little after 4 o'clock today, the Chargers are visiting Cincinnati. Who do you got taking the game?
Well, you know, the Chargers and the Bengals, I feel like these two teams, they're not really all that great. And, you know, I expect these teams to finish below 500, both of them. However, I think the Chargers' pass rush is going to give the Bengals a lot of problems, and especially a rookie quarterback back there in Joe Burrow. So I have the Chargers actually winning today 23-20.
23-20. Real quick question is, I think that Ohio's letting the Bengals have two games with fans there. Is this one of them?
No. Their next game, they will have fans. And in fact, next week, the Bengals travel to Cleveland to play the Browns, and there will be fans there, 6,000.
Okay. Last thing before I let you go, because I feel like if you're going to take your time out to talk to me this morning, that I should give you this little, you know, 50-second space if you want to talk about how great LeBron James and the Lakers are. Because for those that don't know, you're from Los Angeles. At least I think you're from there. I know you lived and went to college in Los Angeles, and that you're a huge Los Angeles Lakers fan. And I was someone that said that the Rockets were going to win the series in seven. And that's before I thought that, you know, Frank Vogel wouldn't adjust. I thought they were going to throw Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee out there for 60 minutes a game between the two. So you can understand why I was a little suspect, but I never doubted the talent of LeBron and Anthony Davis. So go ahead, say what you need to.
So you predicted the Rockets to win in seven?
The way that they could shoot the three ball, especially remember in the bubble that they had beaten Milwaukee, they had beaten they had a couple other big wins in the bubble, and with that team, that the way they're knocking down shots, honestly, I mean, we can agree that when you lose Daniel House, you're destined to lose anyways. But no, I just thought that being able to spread out the ball, I thought they were going to throw JaVale and Dwight out there. And honestly, you have to admit the Lakers were a terrible three-point shooting team, and the Rockets shot enough of them to get that advantage. And I didn't think that they were going to be able to go tit for tat from three, but, you know, obviously, you know, to the point where you have to throw out Talen Horton Tucker, out there because you want to go so small, and then LeBron James can just rip stuff up from there. I just really thought that that was a great adjustment by Vogel.
Yeah, you know, you should have really known about playoff LeBron. And then I
do know about playoff LeBron, I'm just saying.
And then I am disappointed with you being a Kentucky guy if you not knowing about playoff Rondo.
I am the biggest Rajon Rondo fan there. You know what, Tyler Dragon? I appreciate you this morning. No, go ahead. Yeah, just say, I mean, do you think that the Lakers from here can win the championship?
Yes, I do think they can win the championship. That's not because I'm a little bit biased. And
a lot of bit biased.
A Lakers supporter. But, you know, when you have the best player in the world and the second best player of all time, I still have Michael Jordan ahead of LeBron. But LeBron is easily the best player in the National Basketball League right now. You have Anthony Davis, who is a top five player in the NBA. As long as they play as advertised and you have some help along the way with the others, and Kyle Kuzma and Rajon Rondo, Markieff Morris, if you have help from them, then they should be fine.
I'll tell you what, I think that before The Last Dance, you were, and I'll check your receipts, that you said LeBron was the best player of all time. I think The Last Dance might have colored your image on Michael Jordan. But that's neither here nor there. I've got to go on a break and make my picks for the day.
That's fake news.
That's fake news. Oh, okay. All right. We'll see. We'll see after the show. But until then, buddy, have a good day. Stay safe while you're in the stadium and in the press box and whatnot. But can't wait to hear from you again soon, okay?
All right. Thanks for having me on. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tyler. All right. We're going to come back. I'm going to make my picks for the day right here on ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5 FM. Uh-huh. Can y'all really feel me? Angelo Carriero, ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5 FM. Don't have a lot of time. I'm going to jump straight into it. It is NFL Sunday, and we are finally here with the season. I'm going to give you my picks just straight up who I think is going to win today's contest. Seattle faces Atlanta in Atlanta. Seattle's a one-point favorite, but I'm going to take the Falcons. I think they really revamped their offense. It's hard to bet against Russell Wilson, so financially I probably wouldn't put anything on this game, but I'm going to take the Falcons. Jets at Bills, I'll take another home team, the Buffalo Bills. The Jets are just, I don't know about them, man. I really don't. Bears at Lions. This is interesting because as much as I believe in Matt Patricia and the Lions, the Bears signed Robert Quinn to pair with Khalil Mack on that defense. I think that defense is being underrated because they kind of fell off from 2 years ago. I think they're going to shut down the Lions today in Detroit. I'm going to take the Bears in that game. Packers at Vikings. Come on now. Until I see it, Aaron Rodgers owns the NFC North. That includes the Vikings. I'm taking the Packers in Minnesota. Dolphins at Patriots. A lot of money going on the Dolphins. I don't believe it. I believe in Cam Newton. I believe in Bill Belichick. I believe in Josh McDaniels. If you want to bet against those guys for the Miami Dolphins, that's your choice. I'm taking in a lock, a guarantee, is that the Patriots break off the Dolphins. And another lock/guarantee, which I only do one a week, and I'll make that the Patriots. Eagles not getting a lot of love against the Washington football team. I don't understand that. I am taking the Eagles. Dwayne Haskins, J.D. McKissick, that's the offense you want to roll with if you're Washington. Give me Carson Wentz and the Eagles. Raiders at Panthers. Panthers are a little underrated, I think, coming into this year. They're not tanking like Jacksonville is. I'm going with the Carolina I'm going with the Carolina Panthers in this game. The Raiders have to prove it to me. I think the Panthers are going to get a couple wins. They're not going to be a number one overall pick team. Who is going to be the number one overall pick team is the Jacksonville Jaguars. If there's any week they might sneak out a win, it might be this one, but the Colts are favored by 8, and I'll take the Colts in this game as well. Browns at Ravens. I know the Browns play the Ravens really well. Give me the reigning MVP at home with something to prove after their early playoff exit against the Tennessee Titans last year. I'll take the Ravens. Chargers at Bengals. Give me the Bengals, baby. Joe Burrow winning his debut. It took, and speaking of wins in their debut, Kyler Murray got his first win against the Bengals. He goes to the Niners. Don't think he's going to be as lucky today. I'll take San Francisco in that game. Bucks at Saints. Not going against Tampa, even though they're in New Orleans. Give me the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Cowboys at Rams tonight, Sunday Night Football. Cowboys. They're going to upset. Ah, no, you know what? Switch that over. Going Rams. Debut at the stadium. Stan Kroenke built that beautiful stadium in Los Angeles. They're going to do everything they can, they as in the NFL and the referees, to give the Rams the win. I'm going to take the Rams in that game. Steelers at Giants on Monday Night Football. Steelers, Titans at Broncos. Titans all the way. Thank you for listening to my Sunday morning program. I'll be with you next week right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300, 92.5 FM.